It's a real pleasure to be here. It is definitely a little bit more enjoyable coming as a guest of the Chambres and being able to sit and relax in the back. But it's great to be here. Rabbi Gottlieb knows that I deeply value my relationship with him. I very much enjoy the shiurim that he gives and the opportunity to be able to hear them. I have some really I have very fond memories. Happens to be even of with my father, Zichron Levracha, sitting at a Pesach program in Netanya, being able to spend a lot of hours on Pesach hearing Rabbi Gottlieb speak. That was definitely a real highlight, and it's a great success to be able to be here with so many people. A lot of old friends and a lot of people I had a connection with for a decently long time. There is a source sheet going around. I have to just apologize that the numbering is like totally off. As far as a lot of number ones and number twos. My 2.5-year-old that poured water on the mouse track on my laptop is responsible for that. So I apologize, but I will nevertheless do my best. There's something really fascinating about Sukkot. I want to frame it with a brief discussion about Sukkot before we speak about what I think is an absolutely fascinating topic. The Zohar, as is somewhat well known, refers to a sukkah as a tzila d'mehemenusa, what is referred to often as a shadow of emuna, the shade of emuna. And certainly in many Sifrei Chassidus, there's a certain orientation in which the idea of sukkahs is there on some level to be able to strengthen a person's capacity to believe in Hashem, that it has the ability, it's a certain kind of gift, to be able to strengthen a person's emuna while they're in the sukkah. Source number one, just a collection even from the Igret Kal of the Bnei Yisachar, from the Zerik Kodesh, the Rupshitzer, from the Mor V'Shemesh. A lot of Sfarim speak about this idea of sukkah being associated with our emuna. That is in and of itself fascinating, because sukkah, I don't know about for you, but sukkah does not do a whole lot as far as intellectual proofs of God. That when a person sits in the sukkah, and we speak about it having the capacity to be mechazik, to strengthen a person's emunah, so it looks a little bit different from like an age discovery seminar. When you're sitting in a sukkah, you're just enjoying and having a festive meal, or sleeping in the sukkah, whatever that you're doing. So there's something definitely a little bit intriguing about the idea that sukkah has the ability to strengthen emunah, but it seems to point to an idea that at least as far as something which can be mechazik emunah, whether it's remembering Jewish history of Anani HaKavod, whether it's a certain kind of experience close to Ribono Shel Olam, but there seems to be something about emunah associated with sukkahs. What I thought I would talk about is an intriguing question. I don't know why I do this, and I apologize if this sounds deeply odd to anybody here. But on Hoshana Rabbah night, I don't know why, I'm really not sure why, I often like to speak about a particular topic, different topics with different shiurim, but focusing on two very, very prominent schools of thought and the way that they look at a particular topic. Those schools of thought are the world of Brisk. Many of us are from YU and certainly influenced by the world of Soloveitchik and the world of Breslov, and I think none of us are from Uman, so it just is. But there's definitely, it's two schools of thought of massive impact, those impacts manifest itself in different ways. But to speak about particular topics or a particular topic in the way in which both of them, the world of Rabbi Nachman and his Talmidim, the world of Rabbi Chaim Brisker and his father and his Talmidim, there's definitely a lot to speak about. And I figure we speak about the world of Emunah through the prism of how they learn Rambam. The prism how they look at Rambam, how they learn Rambam, to understand a little bit about this, if sukkah is a yontif associated with emunah, so how do they look at it and what exactly is going on? So I want to learn a little bit of Rambam, I want to speak a little bit about the way that different briskers relate to it, and then speak a little bit about the way that different people associated with, again, with the world of Breslov look at it also. Let's begin as follows. Torah tells us in Parshas Yisro, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Tzisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. We know that there is, for many Rishonim, for the Rambam, for the Ramban, and others, a mitzvah to believe in God. That's the mitzvah, it's the first mitzvah the Rambam quotes in Sefer HaMitzvos. We don't know why the Rambam orders things the way he does in Sefer HaMitzvos, but we can intuit why Emunah would be number one on the list. It seems to be relatively foundational in that sense. That's Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That's the source for it. That statement is that Pasuk is incredibly vague and somewhat misleading as far as the source of a mitzvah. It's somewhat vague because, as many Mefarshim point out, there's no command in that pasuk. It's just God stating, I am the Lord, your God. That's all that it is. There's nothing beyond that as far as describing any sort of explicit sivoy, and typically you need a command to be able to have it. Not only that, but as the Or Sameach points out in a different context, Chumash is sometimes a little bit vague in terms of the precise manner in which a person fulfills a mitzvah. So when it says as an example in Chumash, a person should learn Torah, the Or Sameach points out there's very little in Chumash itself, in Nach also, how much a person's supposed to learn, what a person's supposed to learn, and what exactly it's supposed to look like. Aruch Hashem Elkecha, so the world of Emunah, so Emunah is, it's very unclear what that means. How do I fulfill that particular obligation? What does it look like? What do I have to do, if anything? What do I have to believe precisely in order to fulfill a particular obligation? The Rambam, as is well known, sort of was very innovative in this sense on a lot of these questions. But the Rambam counts it as a mitzvah, and the Rambam elaborates on that in the beginning of Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah also, where the Rambam writes, Yesod HaYesodos V'Amud HaChachmos, that a fundamental principle, it's I think the third number one on the sheet, if that's not misleading enough, Leida Sheyesh, that a person has an obligation to know that there is a Matzoi Rishon, that there is something that came first, meaning God, V'hu Mamtzi Kol Nimtza, he's the source of all that gets created, everything comes from Ribbono Shel Olam. Everything comes from Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the mitzvah of Emunah as described here. He elaborates on that again later on in the first parak of Yesodei HaTorah. The Rambam writes, V'yedias davar zeh, the knowledge of this is mitzvahs aseh sheneemar anochi Hashem Elkecha. This is a mitzvahs aseh. Now there's a well-known question, which is a question that already comes from some of the earlier Mefarshim and Rambam Sefer Mitzvot, which there seems to be a little bit of a stira. The stira seems to be between the Rambam and Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam in the beginning of Mishnah Torah. The beginning of Mishnah Torah, the Rambam writes, the mitzvah is to know God, Yediyas Hashem. I think the Radvaz points out, the simple interpretation of Yediyas Hashem means a person knows in a way which they can intellectually prove that a person has a certain kind of knowledge about the Ribbono Shel Olam, which they have the capacity to sort of clarify for themselves. But in Rambam Sefer Mitzvot, written in Arabic, translated into Hebrew, there the Rambam writes the mitzvah is Emunah. And therefore, some of the Mefarshim and Rambam Sefer Mitzvot are bothered by the question, what's really the mitzvah? Is the mitzvah really Yediyah, or is the mitzvah really Emunah? Because they have different, I guess we would say, at least implications, or a minimum, they send us in different directions. The world of Yediyah, so if I don't know what the mitzvah entails, because it's pretty vague, Anochi Hashem Elkecha, and if I'm a brisker and part of what I want to do is to define particular tzivuyim and obligations, so I want to know what it means. And that word Yediyah or Emunah, so that word is a very, very loaded. It's a very, very tricky kind of a word. Where Emunah implies I don't have proof, but I take a little bit of a leap of faith, I have Emunah. Yediyah implies I can prove it, I have a certain kind of knowledge. I believe, I don't know if anybody else had books that are next to my bed, I don't remember that well exactly what I read in them, but I'm pretty confident. There's a new book that came out like a year or so ago, Strauss, Spinoza, and something about Emunah. So I think Rabbi Ari Khan has an article there where he tries to argue that Yediyah and Emunah are really not that different as far as how they're often used, but certainly for many of the Achronim, they assume that the two are very, very different.
The Emunah 1,000 years ago, more Yediyah. So that's
part of what he suggests. Reb Chaim Heller points out, as is somewhat well known also, that in the original Arabic, at least the way he claims it, that the word wasn't really Emunah, it was something which was vague, ambiguous, if it's Emunah or Yediyah. Rosenzweig, you know, points out Kedarko, that he thinks it's intentionally ambiguous to turn to, you know, to use that phrase, the line in between Yediyah and Emunah. That's all there. In the world of Brisker, there's a fascinating interpretation with Reb Chaim. I want to be mosif onto it. I think the Reb Chaim, I think, is somewhat well known. It comes, I think, already a generation up, a generation before. And that is that Reb Shach in the Avi Ezri, in Hilchos Tshuva, writes that he had this question. He asked this question to the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav said, I asked this question to Reb Chaim. And Reb Chaim answered that there's something called Emunah and something called Yediyah. Emunah starts where Yediyah ends. Emunah starts where Yediyah ends. A person has an obligation to do their best to understand as well as possible. I want to be able to understand whatever I have the ability to be able to understand. Okay, very, very nice. But once I've got to that point, so then I have to take that next step and be able to have Emunah. Be able to have Emunah. That's how they learn. That's how they learn Rambam. What's fascinating is that Reb Chaim's father, the Beis Halevi, in the Beis Halevi Al HaTorah in Parshas Bo, has a fascinating take on all of this. And what he does with Rambam is intriguing. Many of us, I imagine, are aware, Briskers have a complex relationship with Sefer Mor Nevuchim. Mor Nefuchim in general is a machlokes. You know, different people have different perspectives on it. In fact, the Rambam there seems to bring in a lot of philosophy and say some really intriguing ideas, led to some very wild responses as far as Mor Nefuchim. You have those who argue, and it goes on both sides. I think there's a professor, Menachem Kellner, I think, who points out that everyone has their own sort of a Rambam. If you're a Varon Cutler, you have like one version of a Rambam, and if you're a professor of philosophy somewhere, so you have your own version of Rambam or Maimonides, depending on how you lean. And there's definitely sort of something going on there. There are those who argue, as Rambam may imply, Mor Nefuchim is like the ultimate of his ultimate, this is what we're striving for. Let's get through Mishneh Torah. Then you have those like Rav Emden, who claim it's like potentially like a forgery and not even really written by Rambam, you know, at all, because how could the Rambam possibly say some of these things? Must be it wasn't written by Rambam. Now, that's an intriguing move in general, as far as just, you know, denying authorship is a, it works, I guess, as far as avoiding certain problems requires you to deny authorship. But what you have in the Beis HaLevi is an approach which is fascinating in terms of how he looks at things in a way which is very, very different from, very different from what one would have associated with Rambam. He writes like this: what does a person do who struggles with Emunah? What does a person do who struggles with it? So if I only had Rambam, I would have thought the answer should be, I'll start with Yediyah. I'll strengthen my Yediyah as much as possible. Once I've been able to strengthen my Yediyah, so now I'm going to come to a place where I'm going to be able to have Emunah. That. But first step is going to be Yediyah on some level. The Beis HaLevi responds in a way which is absolutely fascinating. And he writes, if a person does, this is very, I guess, scary on one level, he says, I'm not sure we have smooth solutions for a person who struggles with faith. The more that someone sort of debates you, the more that someone goes back and forth with you. So, lo yoyo klal, I'm not sure it's really going to help that much, because in the end of the day, says the Beis HaLevi, all the proofs that may be there, one will get to a point where you have to take a certain kind of leap of faith, and ultimately you're taking it or you're not taking it. And all the proofs that are there are not as critical. Beis HaLevi thinks that often it doesn't even make as much sense to invest in them the same way. This is very much part of that world, as some of us, I'm sure, know, that Rabbeinu Bachya in Chovas HaLevavos begins with discussions about proof of God, and that's where we have, you know, the Gra already associated with the Gra, about skipping that particular section. And this world associated a lot, again, the Chavetz Chaim also, a certain kind of simple faith. So that becomes, to the Beis HaLevi, in many ways like a rejection of that model of Yediyah, of that model of intellectual proof, and really embracing a certain kind of Emunah, where he suggests, the Beis HaLevi, and in the next paragraph, that it happens to be that one of the best ways, he writes, you want to strengthen your Emunah, it's a daven to Hashem that he helped give you more Emunah. Now, if you really struggle with Emunah, that's going to be a hard ask, because if I don't really believe, the idea of asking is going to be a little bit challenging. For the Beis HaLevi, you know, that's how it sort of, take that leap, and then it's going to be able to come. Along these lines, and again, like the Brisker fascination of defining particular words, Salvechik and Alatshuva even interprets the word Yediyas Hashem as not being anything philosophical. Yediyas Hashem can't be philosophical because, as the Rav understands, there's two different reasons why you would think it's impossible to argue that you really have to embrace certain kind of philosophy. If you reject philosophy, that would be one reason why. The Rav suggests, you know, it'd be fascinating to have as your first mitzvah on the list of the Taryag, a mitzvah that requires that kind of intellectual prowess to be able to master a certain kind of certain philosophical proofs, the worlds of metaphysics. It would be impossible for that to be really the expectation. Like, there's no way that could really be. Points at the Rav. So he interprets the word Yediyah, he interprets more as a constant awareness rather than as philosophical proof and knowledge. Bechol drachecha da'ehu, of knowing God in all of your ways, becomes the real mitzvah of Emunah, but no per se need for serious, real philosophical learning. So in many ways then, what happens here in the world of the Beis HaLevi, we have the same idea also in the Brisker Rav, quoting from Chaim, the same idea in Rav Soloveitchik, which is that there's something going on of downplaying elements of the philosophy, strengthening the need for a certain kind of leap of faith, emunah, which is there, tzila, the capacity to help that, and that's the real emunah. Says the Beis HaLevi, if a person only believes based on what they are able to understand intellectually, they have not yet fulfilled the mitzvah d'oraisa of emunah. that mitzvah can only kick in once you really start believing. If we have it in generation 1, 2, and 3, so they came out last year, or maybe this year, I don't know. I guess it's tough to pick again. But last year, they came out with a fascinating sefer. David Soloveitchik was the last living son of the Brisker Rav. So David passed away, he passed away about a year and a half ago or so. So they put out one major sefer last year, which is from his Ksav Yad. His chidushim, like in the world of Brisk, on Avoda and Kachim, on Avoda and Karbanos, that they put out that sefer. It was a big deal in the world of Brisk because Briskers are very precise about things, and they printed the sefer with the same color and the same color font as was true in Reb Chaim's sefer and the Brisker Rav sefer. So there was a statement of like this is becoming sort of part of the Mesorah in many ways of Brisk. But David Soloveitchik in general was much more prolific as a writer, as this Torah coming out, than some of the others. And they came with a different sefer, which is fascinating. I'm not aware of anything in the sefer on Avodah and Karbanos relevant to this discussion, mostly because I can't speak with authority about what's in the sefer on Avodah and Karbanos, but I wager some money. But they came with another sefer, not that he wrote directly the same way, but it's a sefer on Drush Va'agada. On different topics, and he makes a similar suggestion to the Beis Halevi, playing up the need for emuna, based on a comment of the Mechilta. The Mechilta says, "Gedola emuna sheheminu Yisrael b'misha amar v'haya ha'olam," that the emuna that the Jews had at Kriyas Yamsuf was so great that because of their emuna, sharsa aleihem ruach hakodesh v'amru shira. That they were worthy of, they earned the right, they had a certain kind of Ruach Kodesh, and that's how they were able to say, as Yashir, it was the result of Ruach HaKodesh. Point out David Soloveitchik something fascinating. Assuming that the word emuna connotes faith, a certain leap of faith, so he just wonders implicitly, if there's one place where you should not have needed a leap of faith, it should have been at Kriyas Yamsuf. Because Kriyas Yamsuf were, oh so so most of it, I'm seeing the, it's splitting. That would do it for me. That seems like that would be sufficient. Point out David Soloveitchik that even when they were there, it doesn't say in the Medrash Gedola Yediyas Hashem that was there. It's Gedola the Emuna that they had at that moment. Because suggests David Soloveitchik, the godless of real Emuna requires that next step and that leap of faith, and that requires something which is. He pointed out based on Rambam in Sotah Torah Berachas, Mavur Shagam Lacher Kol Anisev Amovsim Yitzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf Shero Beinayim Adain Hutzrichu L'midas HaEmuna. They still needed some emuna, and that was the real fulfillment of the mitzvah. So the first sort of school of thought of how you look at Rambam in the world of Brisk, I think this really goes down in the generations. There's this phenomenon of downplaying elements of the philosophy. At minimum, it's a tzivoy incumbent upon others. Understanding the mitzvah does require a certain kind of leap of faith for many, and it does require a very intense awareness. Because of that, the way you fulfill the mitzvah for the Beis Halevi will involve a little bit less philosophy. He points out that when the Rasha asks his question at the Seder even, that our response, if you are medayik closely, point to the Beis Halevi, to the Chacham, we say something directly to the Chacham. To the Tam, directly to the Tam. To the Rasha, we just say out loud. Not even directly to him, because he points out it's hard sometimes to convince people, and the job is that they themselves embrace and daven and get comfortable taking a particular leap of faith. If Brisk downplays philosophy, so the next school of thought takes it to an entirely different level, and that is the world of Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov comes on the scene, a great-grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. Rabbi Nachman speaks a lot about Emuna. And he's a primary source kind of a person. So there's a lot in the Likutei Moharan, it's a lot of Chumash, a lot of Mamari Chazal, a lot of things going on there. And Rabbi Nachman has to figure out, so how am I learning Rambam? Because the Rambam becomes so foundational, that I have to contend with Rambam. And the Rambam, the way he seems to read Rambam, is more philosophical. The Rambam is more of a philosophical work. So what does Rabbi Nachman do with it? So there's two or three unbelievably intriguing passages. This is from Sichos Haran. It's at least in like seven or so other places in Sichos Haran, not to be confused with Drushos Haran. Rabbi Nachman writes as follows: Be'inyan Sifrei HaMechkarim, those works that delve into philosophy, Mevuar Kvar Etzleinu Kama Pa'amim She'aser La'asok Bahem. You're not allowed to learn them. Bitzarik laharchik me'od, libli lumud osam, libli lahab behem klal. You shouldn't learn them or look at them at all. But who's he referring to? Afilu b'sifrich hakiros shel gedolei Yisrael. Even if they were written by gedolei Yisrael, meaning I can call them gedolei Yisrael, but never look at their svarim. But never look at their svarim. Who's he really referring to? The answer is a whole lot of people. But in Chayim Moran, also by Rabbi Nachman, they get a little bit more specific. And this is like a great way of contending. He's not Rebbe Yaakov Emden, you know, arguing that it wasn't certain things were written by Rambam. They were written by Rambam. Misifre Chakiros, parentheses. Misefer Moret Nevuchim. Sipur Harbi Ma'od Kamepamim, Vasar Lenu Ma'od Ma'od Liblila Ayim Bahem. I don't know if you have some shit, I apologize if you don't. That's usher to learn those farm entirely, he writes. You can't go there at all. The Shiloh is why, and here there's two possibilities. If we're going to make it like, again, a little bit of like a conceptual Lumdis orientation. Is the Isser to look at them inherent? There's something bad about those farim? Or is the concern that if I learn those farim, that may lead me to be in a trickier place? Meaning within the writings of Rabbi Nachman, who's arguing you shouldn't learn these things. So what's the reason why? Is it because it's bad faith if it comes from certain riyas? And later on, he addresses Chovas HaLevavos, not so much. He writes, I'm not only aware of this, he writes also later on in Chaim Aran, even in Mishnah Torah, like the sections in Hilchos Deos, the sections in Hilchos Yisodi HaTorah, the section Hilchos Vos, all those things, he writes, you shouldn't be learning. Says, so what's the problem with it? So there are those who claim that there is like a shift in Rabbi Nachman, even in this respect, which is Stam, I think, a little bit fascinating. At minimum, he holds it to Siak. At minimum, he holds that, again, it's a way of him contending with Rambam, which is just to reject it. Reject it straight up. He rejects it, we'll get to why in a second, or how he justifies that in a second. But he rejects it straight up. It's definitely a concern that this will lead to something else. That's definitely part of the concern that he's explicit about. That if a person engages, he's nervous what's going to come as a result of it. It seems like, and this again, at least one academic has pointed this out, in Rabbi Nachman's earlier writings, that seems to have been the only concern. The only concern was it'll impact you negatively, which means if you know it won't impact you negatively, it could be it will enhance things for you. That's a wonderful thing at all. As Rabbi Nachman got a little bit older, passed away at age like 38 or so a little bit older is not like so old, but as he got a little bit older, so he actually got more extreme, as opposed to like the opposite phenomenon. Sometimes when a person's younger, they're more sort of like passionate and one-sided. And sometimes as they get older, there's a certain like perspective. So with Rabbi Nachman, that wasn't the case here. So Rabbi Nachman, it seems to think that it's not the quality of Muna that we're going for. And for Rabbi Nachman, which is intriguing, it's really the reason why Torah Shebichsav is so silent on the topic. Meaning, Anokha Hashem Elkecha Asher Tzich Be'arat Mitzrayim. So, period. That's our discussion of Emunah. There's not a whole lot more that's going on. For some Rishonim, that's because every person at their own level, some it's going to be more complex and some not. For Rabbi Nachman, that's very intentional. It's intentional to make a statement and leave it at that, and that's all that it is. And because of that, we're entirely good to go. Part of the way he justifies it, which is it's a fascinating, you know, discussion in general, is that he downplays in many ways Rambam, partially impacted because Rambam downplayed Kabbalah. So if Rambam downplayed Kabbalah, and Kabbalah is the source of all good, so then it must be that Rambam is therefore, you know, I can push him aside a little bit. That is different than, as an example, this is not a fascinating marmakom, the Baal Techeles, the Gershon Henoch Leiner, the Radzina Rebbe, wrote a Hakdama to the Sefer Beis Yaakov, where he writes, if you really know the Arizal, if you really know Zohar, so everything Rambam says is really based in Zohar, everything Rambam says is really based in that. I don't know Zohar, and I don't know Arizal, I'm still somewhat suspect. So Rabbi Nachman seems to have been suspect also, and his move was just to say, well, I mean, he doesn't fit with the Torah of the Ari, and it's not fitting so much with the Torah of the Baal Shem. And therefore, from his perspective, on these kinds of issues that relate to Kor Emunah, Rambam becomes not really our guy. Rambam becomes not the one who's really it. In that sense, one finds something fascinating. If we just had Rambam in a vacuum, or the way that many would learn Rambam, Rambam Yisori HaTorah, Rambam Mor Nevuchim, we would certainly embrace a view which is more philosophical, embracing a view which is more abstract, a view based on metaphysics, a view based on potentially proof, certainly of Chovas HaLevavos or Nebacha kind of an idea. What you find in both the worlds of Brisk and that world of Breslov is a certain kind of downplaying of that element of Yediya, which the Radvaz seems to read into Rambam, and the Chovas is the Pashup shot of a certain kind of like abstract Yediya, philosophical awareness, and he downplays it in a different direction. The Shaila of how you downplay it, so Brisk downplays it, they can't reject Rambam. For them, Rambam's everything. That would be, you know, it's impossible. That would be blasphemous, you know. It would be the 14th Iker, if not the, you know, prerequisite to Oli Karim. You know, is it at all? It's like the, I think they point out even Beis Halevi in one of his drushas asks a kasha on Matan Torah from a Rambam. Like, how can Matan Torah be? It's against Rambam that you can't. Meaning, like, that's already like the level of like, it starts from there, you know? So Rambam is everything. So if Rambam is everything and the idea is everything, so then on some level, so then what you have in Brisk is Yediya and Emuna, Yediya b'chol derechecha da'ehu, Yediya and Emuna which comes binosaf in addition to any kinds of proofs that may happen to be there, all of that is in many ways present. All of that is considered to be part of it. And in the world of Breslov, what you're doing with the Rambam is just denying, let's avoid these sections. To avoid these sections entirely, because in the words of Rabbi Nachman, I guess in the English translation, the greatest faith is the innocent faith of the ordinary man. And that confusing is not just that it's a siag, atu, maybe I'll end up, but rather there's inherent value in a certain kind of simplistic kind of a faith in the world of Rabbi Nachman. In that sense, I'll just, guess in the last 45 seconds or so, in the sukkah of the tzilat de mehemenusa, of a certain kind of shade of emuna, of one that can strengthen emuna, it's definitely intriguing that for so many, again, I don't know if the sukkah contributes intellectually to our understanding of God as much as it brings in a certain kind of experience, as it allows a person to feel something, and it reminds us of a history of an Ani HaKavod, what the Ribono Shel Olam has done for us, which is certainly there. But either way, as far as whatever path a person takes, whether it's the philosophical Rambam or it's the brisker Yediya, and then a degree of leap of faith, meaning beginning with something, then a leap of faith, or the world of Rabbi Nachman, which is just faith, whichever direction a person takes, that definitely may be one of the reasons why it's somewhat vague. Yenoch Hashem Elokecha and Chumash, describing the mitzvah of Emuna, being a little bit silent on how to fulfill that element of Emuna, so that may be intentional also. There may be different ways of coming to that Emuna, different people, each in their own way, even the way, again, that people learn Rambam is certainly a little bit different, and it all contributes to a deeper and better understanding of our own capacity to appreciate, to believe, and as the Rav said, b'chol derechecha da'ehu, in that sense, the Yedias Hashem of the constant awareness of God in our lives certainly can become very powerful. In the sukkah, we do that not only while we're sort of in a more formal kadosh, mikdash, ma'at kind of a setting, but even when we're outside in that world, to experience emunah in that way certainly is mechazik, the idea of an emunah, of a yediyah, of a constant awareness of Hashem. Really always a pleasure. I deeply regret that I'm running out right now. I would love to hear Rabbi Gottlieb, certainly more than me talking about a topic that I already prepared. So I would definitely rather be here. So I apologize that I'm heading out. People sometimes say that and don't mean it the same way. I mean that really seriously. I would. It's Sir Parshas Korach even, and that wasn't even like Euler Rush, Euler Shcheno. That was speaking about a non-halachic topic in a halachic way. Was like, I don't know. That was masterful. Aaron Chambre was there getting involved. The whole chevre. It was great. But either way, thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to be here, to see so many familiar faces. Have a wonderful rest of your sukkahs.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rabbi Turetsky.